Well, hi everybody, my name is Annette Irwin and this is Albert Swaz, and we're here to talk to you about configuration business as usual, configuration manager business as usual. So we were thinking about this based on our role. So we're premier field engineers, we're based here in Auckland for Microsoft, and we go out to our customers and we help them out with their issues that they have with configuration manager, any related health issues, any related problems that they're having, so deep diving, helping them to come to solutions and things like that. So this is based on feedback that we've had from the customers and the kind of issues that keep on popping up, basically. So this is our key takeaway. Config Manager 2012 makes your life easy.
I sense some laughter over there. So. Yeah.
I'm actually thinking easier, because sometimes it can actually really make it really hard. You know, the stories where we rebuild servers as desktops and desktops as servers. I'm sure you've all read some of those kind of stories. And that's a bit of a worry, right? So it can make our life easy in most cases, but it can also make it a little bit hard. But we want you to take it away and say, it's going to make your life easy. It's all positive, right? Now, so what we'll cover... deploying out apps without fail. So what does that mean? Using our detection methods and all that kind of stuff. A lot of people are still a little bit like, well, how does it actually work? What do we use? What's the recommendation? And things like this when it comes like to around, if you've only just got an executable to push out, how do you do that without getting someone in to come in and repackage it, or you spending time repackaging it, which can take a long time to package into MSI if you don't really know what you're doing. So MSI packaging is not really what people do for a living, unless you are a packager. But most people generally are sysadmins who do packaging if they have to. So I'm just going to cover today using executable distribution. Who is actually using that software? So using some of the other features of Configuration Manager, software metering, asset intelligence, and Albert's going to go over that one for us. Cool tools that you might not know about, so I'm going to cover a couple of the tools in the R2 toolkit. You might not even know that there is an R2 toolkit. If you do, that's cool. I'm just going to go over a couple or three of those, and then you can go away and try them out yourselves in your own environments. Have we patched lately? So who here every month checks their reports that they are actually patched and 100%? Anyone actually check the reports? So a few people?
Do the reports actually work for you? Yeah?
It's pretty accurate, right?
Yeah, because a lot of the complaints that we're hearing is like, oh, I'm not really getting that 100%. Yeah, that's the thing.
Point.
Is that even possible? So probably not.
It's probably not, because, you know, we have computers that are sitting on desks that are not even turned on. We have some in the cupboard. We have some way of getting warranty repairs and all this kind of stuff. So how can it be 100%? So we're not going to say it's going to be 100%. But it can be close, or close enough. Keeping the boss off our back. What do we mean like that by this? So giving them the information that they need, giving them the reports automatically, subscribing to reports, creating a custom report. How many here actually create custom reports? A few? Not many. And a lot of you will probably not be looking at that because you think, oh, there's 400 reports out of the box. I can probably use just something out of that. I can export it to Excel and do some manipulation and all this kind of thing. And that'll probably take you, you know, half an hour, whatever it is. Well, I'm just going to show you how to create a really basic custom report. And then that'll give you hopefully enough information to go away, have it a go yourself. How many people here have test environments? Mm-hmm, a couple. So most of you are playing directly in production, right? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Best practice. So.
Yeah, best practice. Play in production. Yeah. Okay. So that's pretty much all I'm going to say about that. Do you want to say anything?
We don't have slides. We just have demos, all right? So feel free to ask questions along the way after we're doing some stuff. Just raise your hand and, yeah.
If we don't know the answer straight away because we're sort of concentrating on the demo, don't worry. We'll just defer it to the end and we'll, you know, come on up and ask us later as well.
Cool.
So the kind of demos I'll just quickly go through here just to sort of give you a bit of context. Deploying applications. Like I said, I'm just going to do a basic executable. And No, no, go back, go back. I want to just go back through.
Sorry.
I just want to touch on this. I don't like this sort of crossing over thing. And so then after that, we're going to do software metering, like I said. Config Manager 2012, R2 Toolkit. So this is the order. Forgive me if we muck it up a little bit. We go different order. It's all right. Software update management. And then at the end, like I said, reporting. So the big one is custom. Oh, don't not mean to see that one yet. The big one you're meant to sort of go, ooh, is it going to work, is the custom report one. So just bear with me on that one. All right, now you can push the button.
Yay. All right. On to the demo.
Now, so this is me. So I'm doing this demo. All right. This desk is quite low, eh? But if I go like this, I'm going to be too low as well. All right, I'll just go like this. All right, so we're going to do a basic application deployment. Now, are all of you pretty much familiar with application deployment? That's what you do, right? How many people here are predominantly deploying MSIs? Okay. And then some of you, or a lot of you, are using executable distribution, and then you're using a detection method, right? And so what kind of detection methods are some of you using? Using registry?
File versions,
all of that kind of stuff. Okay. So I am going to demonstrate some of that, but we're also going to look at some of the other options that we have in applications as well. The reason I just wanted to touch on it was that MSI, yeah, we don't have to have an MSI, right? That's all good. Okay, so let's get into this. So we go into our application management, of course. We go in here, and as you see, I've got a few ones here. Some of them are real, some of them are sort of not. And I'm just going to create an application. And newbies always get stuck here, right? They're like, oh my gosh, how am I meant to do my executable? There's no option there. So I'm just going to click on this button down here, manual specify, and click on next. And I'm going to do one. You may have all heard of this, and I hope you have, this application. Anyone heard of that? Microsoft Maths? Yeah, a few people. It's a cool little application if you're into mathematics. And I'm just going to, of course, put in a few things here. Microsoft, and I don't even know the software version. Doesn't really matter. Click Next, of course. And then, so this area here is the application catalog. Who's using application catalog with their users? Oh, good. That is really good. People are still shying away from it, so they're still doing the old workstation push and all this kind of stuff. But honestly, if you start to use software application catalog, you might find that the service desk type calls about software requirements, oh, I need this application, they can go to the catalog and get it. So you need to start thinking about, can I use that? Can we use that and be a bit smarter? Reduce the cost of having a service desk, get your users to be a bit more proactive. You want to add anything there on that one?
So you got a software center and you got application catalog. When do software get visible in the software center, and when do they become visible in the application catalog? So machine deployments would be on software center. What about updates? Would updates be divisible in the software center? If you turn them on to be. So after deploying the software updates, do they remain there? Do they remain in the software center after the deployment of the software updates have occurred? No.
Okay. So the content library, is everyone quite familiar with how that works? How do you view what's inside the content library?
So the three main folders in the content library, what are they? There's two more. The data, right? And then the package one, right? So what benefit do we get out of the content library versus doing packages? Because you're still able to deploy application packages just like we did in the classic method in 2007, right? So what benefit do we gain out of using the application model? Exactly, so single instance store. So those three different folders that you see actually serve as pointers to whatever other file it needs. So if you're deploying different versions of the same software, it will actually make use of those pointers instead of using this duplicate files. Okay. All right, here's another question. When you're deploying packages, do you have the option to install from the DP versus downloading locally and installing packages? Okay? I'm talking about packages. Yeah. So yes, when you're deploying packages, you still have the option to run it from the DP. Versus applications, when you're deploying applications, what's the only choice that you have? It's always going to be local. It's always going to be download and install.
You just spent all the time it took me to create that application. Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Perfect.
Thank
timing.
You. So there, so I created that application quite quickly. Was there any questions on that? Pretty standard, right? Nothing special. Who here uses PowerShell to create their applications? Is anyone doing that?
Ah, got a couple of hands there. Good.
Cool. What do you reckon? Are you using it straight from the PowerShell command line, or are you putting that into a script? Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's quite useful. Yeah, cool. So the PowerShell commandlets, I'm not actually going to do too much here. I'm just going to point them out to you. But of course, we do have them available now. The key one that we have is new-cm application. And let's see if that's going to, there it is there. And of course, ISE is our friend, right? So this application is really cool to do PowerShell stuff with. If you're not doing PowerShell too much yet, I do recommend you get into it because it is the future of how we manage our applications, especially Microsoft Suite, right? So PowerShell is becoming quite prevalent. So I do recommend you get into that. Have you got into it much, Albert? Doing a little bit of PowerShell here on now?
In Exchange, but not in CM.
Yeah. I've sort of been playing around with it a little bit, and it is actually quite easy. It's not rocket science, really. But I did have a script I was going to show you guys, but it sort of didn't work this morning, so I'm not going to show you because it's too embarrassing.
So what's the main benefit of using PowerShell versus doing the old-fashioned wizard way? Speed? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's the main benefit that you get out of it. Have you seen that option to retire applications? Do you use it? So do you understand what it means? Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
So for those of you who may not have encountered or read up on it, yeah. So when you retire an application, what happens? You cannot create new deployments for that application. So think of a scenario, when are you going to retire an application? When it's probably superseded by a newer version, right? So when it's superseded by a newer version, it's good that you retire that application such that you cannot make new deployments of it. But you've already have past deployments of that application. What about the users? Do they still see that in the Software Center? Yes. So that's one thing to watch out for. So you still have users looking at that old version of the software because you have an older deployment of it and it's still available. Mm. All right?
So what do we do? Do we delete those old deployments or what's the...
You can mark them as retired. Mm. So you can rename them with a prefix called retired, so they know that it's retired, that you have a new version up there, right? Or you can just simply delete them. Now, remember, when you retire software, you can actually reinstate them, okay? What does that mean? Just putting them back to their previous status that makes them deployable again, okay?
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. So how long does an application sit in retirement for?
It depends. So if it's retired, and you have no deployments of that software, it's going to take 60 days and it will be automatically removed. But if you have a previous deployment of it, it sits there indefinitely until you actually remove it. Okay?
Cool. That sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Supersedence, so most of you are using supersedence or not? Yeah, a few of you are? Yeah, because that's a new, nice new feature, right? We no longer have to go and do anything too special like push out some uninstall and wait for that. Supersedence will take care of it for us. So take advantage of all these little features. So the next thing that we're going to briefly show is software metering.
So I'll pardon me for the asking a show of hands all the time, but how many actually use software metering? Quite a few. Now, if you go to your software metering, you'll see that there's a lot of rules over here. How do these rules get created? Why are they there already by default? Anyway. Yeah, so you have software and hardware inventory, right? So when that comes in, whatever software has been detected, reported by inventory, it actually creates, automatically creates a software metering rule for it. But what's the status? It's disabled by default. So if you have the software, it's actually, the software metering rule would actually be here. But looking at the status at the right side, you'll see that's all disabled. We just enabled a couple of them. But key things to note is when you enable a software metering rule, would you be able to get the report straight away? I need to enable it now. Boom. Right? Then when do you expect the report? The next? Right? Is it only the next inventory that we're after? Where do we check? Where do we check? So probably, since you mentioned the client, let's look at the client properties. There is a client property or a client setting here for software metering. And there's the data collection. All right? When you're creating a software metering rule and enabling it, what happens next? You just enable a software metering rule. It creates or it updates what? The machine policy. All right? So the machine policy is downloaded every how long? Every 60 minutes by default. Now 60 minutes by default, how many, well, who among you changed that? To how long? Lower or higher? Slightly lower. So is it good practice to have it really happening often? This client policy of 60 minutes falling interval? No. Why not? Network traffic, exactly. So depending on the number of clients that you have, and if you've set this to happen every 5 minutes, then your clients would be grabbing the machine policy unnecessarily every 5 minutes, right? Probably the purpose for you to actually lower it down is testing. Why would you do that even? Why not use the function to manually trigger the machine policy cycle, right? What tools can you use to trigger the machine policy retrieval from the server? Client notification, yeah. So that's come with the new version, right? So you can right-click and initiate it from the server, right? So you do that for testing rather than changing this value to a lower value. Now going back to software metering, you can schedule it to this one by default every 7 days. I enable it now. Software metering, the report would happen 7 days plus 60 minutes maximum, depending on what the timing is, right? Okay, so when you do a schedule, there is a simple schedule and a custom schedule. Who uses a custom schedule here? No one? What's the difference between using a custom schedule and a simple schedule? Slightly there. So if you do custom schedule, what happens? Right? What do you have? It's also recur every 7 days. Now, you notice that we've changed this a bit. Right? When we had custom schedule before, what did we specify? A day, a time. Right? So whatever day and time you specify it, all clients at the same time will run this. So the great thing about the new custom schedule, right, and the simple schedule, they now both probably would not cause that network traffic. Because it depends on when the client was installed on a machine. Okay? The client was installed probably on different times per machine. So they will not at the same time do a hardware inventory, do a software inventory cycle, or a scan cycle, or a software metering. All right, so my point is, software metering cycle is controlled over here. Now, in 2007, you can only enable software metering for the entire site. Because we have client settings in 2012, it's going to be what? You can do it per collection, because you can create new client settings per collection anyway. So I just want to run quickly now through the monitoring and show you that we have a report already for software metering. So I can quickly just look for software metering reports here. So the scenario is you have limited office licenses. So you want to track, like you've deployed it to a number of people, you want to track who actually uses it. So after that, you determine that these are the actual people who use it, then retain the software for them, and probably for those who have never used it or rarely use it, reallocate that to other members of the organization. So looking at this particular report, just quickly run it and add a value. Why do I have 3 months here only? That's all the data I've got. Exactly. It's good. So we only started doing this last July. Okay? So let's look at the report from the 8th month of this year. So there, maximizing that, you'll have 0 for most of them. Then one time I used Notepad. Right, so you can imagine the number of times I actually jump into this lab, to this lab environment and run something. All right, and when it actually run, well, 3 times in July, 1 time in August, 2 in September.
So who is actually checking their reports and making sure that stuff is sort of there's licenses out there that shouldn't be out there. Are people proactively checking these reports? You know, is your asset... Yeah, yeah, good. So your asset team is finding out about this information? Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is, we also have this feature called the asset intelligence. We cannot demo it because obviously we have unlimited licenses. But yeah, the thing is, when you enable the asset intelligence reports, you synchronize with your Microsoft volume licensing agreement, and then you would have that file compared against what you have deployed, right? So you have a, all right, just out of the box, I have a question. When you want to find out the software that is installed out there, which inventory gives you? Hardware inventory or software inventory? Which one? It's the hardware. So it's funny because it's hardware inventory, but actually gives you the software installed, all right? So anyway, so it compares what you have deployed versus what how many licenses you actually have. So the asset intelligence reports gives you a fair bit of reports regarding the recently executables, okay, and compare it with all the licenses that you have.
Who's using asset intelligence? No one. Well, one.
Yeah.
Have you imported your MVLS?
So
you think is it accurate or is it sort of ish? Yeah.
Because there's also
a caveat at the bottom that says don't rely on this to actually match up the data, eh? Which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So that's really it for software metering, a bit of asset intelligence information. If you need our assistance, we can actually go on site. Help you guys enable the feature.
Did you have a question here? Okay.
Yeah.
Do I have to align?
Yes.
Yeah. It would be best to, just to make sure it does import correctly. Otherwise, your reports will be skewed. And it might even miss out stuff. So You might even just be able to put in a comma or something like that in your file.
Yeah, because what happens in the database when you're running the reports is actually referencing that particular format. And if it's in the incorrect place, you won't get a proper report, basically. Mm. Yeah. So the question was, how long does the machine have to be inactive? All right. So that comes down to a number of things. When does a client become inactive in the first place, right? Right? So you haven't given hardware inventory for some time. You haven't given software inventory. You haven't retrieved a machine policy for some time, or given, most importantly, the heartbeat, right? So you have maintenance tasks, right? So depending on the maintenance tasks that you've enabled, so those maintenance tasks will be able to clear that machine off of your SCCM records if it has been inactive for the number of days that you set it. Exactly. Right. So it will be dependent on that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good question, really. It's a valid one, because if it has not been cleared off your SCCM database, then it will still be reporting back.
Yeah.
Right. Any other questions?
Cool. All right. So the moral to this is, if you'd like to see what the comparison is from your MVLS in Config Manager, then go ahead, get your statement, import it, and see what the numbers look like.
Next demo?
No, it's your turn. You're doing...
Which
one
is it?
I think it was your turn, right?
Oh, yeah. So I'm done with the software metering. So we're going to do a bit of software updates. Don't fall asleep. So
all right. So is everyone using Config Manager for their software updates? Pretty much? Yeah. You're doing server and client? Yeah. Yep. Yes,
we have. So we have a number of clients that are fairly large. I won't mention them, but they are using SCCM. Because it does have a lot of benefits versus using the WSOS standalone, right? You get the reports. You get the flexibility to get only the updates that you need using automatic deployment rules, using Pilot, which I'm going to show you right now.
Yeah.
So you got here a list of all the software updates. What is your practice? Do you have a pilot group of users for your test updates? Yeah, that's good. Do you use automatic deployment rules to push updates to those pilot? No? Okay. So some of you may not. So for us, we always recommend that if you have a pilot group, they're meant to be pilot anyway. So it might as well relieve the administrator from that administrative overhead. So we let the automatic deployment rules run for that pilot group. So in my environment, I have a pilot group here called Software Updates Pilot. Okay?
Are we talking about workstations or servers here, Robert?
Oh, yeah. That's another good question. So if you're going to create a pilot group, is it going to be a mix of desktops and servers in that pilot group? It may be, yeah. Right? Because it's only a pilot, again, so you can have the mixture of both. But in my case, I only have one machine here, which is Windows 8.1. So let's just imagine that it's actually a mix of servers and so on. So I'm going to create a software, an automatic deployment rule. All right. Let's call it ADR pilot. So, all right. Then the collection will be targeted to the pilot group. Okay. Now, here's another question. Do you add it to an existing software update group or create a software update group each time? Create a new one. Who doesn't? You create a new one? No, you don't. Oh, okay. So these are the pros and cons. How many updates should you have as a best practice per deployment? 1,000. Very good. He's been reading. So Yeah, it used to be 500, so now it's up to 1,000. So with 1,000, how can you know that you've reached 1,000 already? Right? If you're running automatic deployment rules every month and you're just using the same existing software update group, do you manually go in and check the number of updates in that software update group? All right. If you have that as part of your process, then you can very well do so. But then the disadvantage there is that you need to go in and manually check how many updates you actually have in that software update group at that point. I went to a customer recently. Yeah, they're here. But they stopped deploying updates because it's grown too large, right? To a point that it doesn't allow the clients to download what they need anymore. Okay? All right. So in this case, let's create a new software update group. Was there a question? Sorry. All right. And enable it after running. Automatically deploy software updates found by this rule. So now you can put in your criteria. We only want the required ones, the product, all those that are not superseded yet, and probably the ones that are having a particular severity. So I'm interested in Windows 8.1. And also interested in Windows Server 2012 R2. Okay, required, it has to be an equation greater than or equal to 1. If at least one machine requires it, I want to grab that one. All right, severity, I only want the critical and important ones, for example. And then finally, superseded, no. We'll talk about maintaining updates in a while, okay? All right, here's another option. Run the rule after any software update point synchronization. Do you use this? Would you enable the rule to run, right? Or run the ADR whenever you have a synchronized one? Yeah, plan it an hour out or run it on a schedule. That's better, right? Okay? For me, I just run this one when I'm doing a testing. Okay? So this one is 30 days effective after this one. In this case, probably I'll just run it now. Just for testing. Okay. Take note, this is based on UTC, all right? So this tells you when it's going to be available. Now, we of course use maintenance windows, right? All right. So when you have maintenance windows, how long do you give it? 2 hours? Is that enough? Are you finding that enough, 2 hours, to be able to run the software updates? Because sometimes when you run software updates, some of the updates restart the machine, if you allow it to. It restarts the machine, and then it goes on installing more updates. In cases where you have too many of those happening, you run out of your maintenance window.
Unless you have really fast VMs.
Yeah.
You might be able to avoid that.
Okay. So this is where you control the restarts as well.
Just restart.
And suppress them. Okay. So alerts, if you have SCOM, just enable this. All right. There you go. There are a couple of new options here. Allow clients on a metered internet connection, and if, or allow the client to download from the internet. You're not allowing that? So what if I'm a user, I'm a mobile user, right? I'm mostly going around different customers. I get the advertisement, or I get the deployment now. So my machine policy was downloaded. So I'm told to download updates. Then I disconnect because I am off to a customer, right? So if I don't tick this, I won't be able to download the updates until I come back, which is next month. So what happens to me? If I don't enable this, I go to try and VPN to my network and I get napped. You know what I mean by napped? You get quarantined, right? So that happens to me a lot. So,
yeah, me too.
Yeah, so the thing is you might want to keep that enabled so that you can allow the clients to install updates from the internet as long as they got that machine policy to install it. How does it work with? So direct access, you're basically tunneling into your corporate network anyway, right? Mm-hmm. But this one is saying, what if you're not able to connect to your corporate network? Then you can grab it off the... No, because remember, the policy that you downloaded tells you which... That's the thing. When you've been gone for the month, the scenario doesn't work for you, right? Because you did not get the machine policy. So this works really well when you are able to get that policy at least before you go out for a month, okay?
Do you have people who are off the network for a month? Probably do. Salespeople, people like that, right? Yeah, but every now and again you can get that. They're on their own.
Okay, then we just install on a DP. That's it. Download updates from our updates folder. Oops, wrong one. Sorry. Yep, that one. Then next. All right, now this gives you the opportunity to save it as a template. This is the only place where you can actually save it as a template. Have you found this one useful? Yeah?
Yeah.
Because the next time you make a deployment, you don't have to go through those so many settings anymore because you're using that template. Okay? So you can save that as a template. So the other one I sort of missed was the metered software. Do you want to allow your clients to install updates when they're on a metered software, when they're on a metered network connection, right? This works really well. Works only when you have a supported device like Windows 8.1, because on 8.1 you can say that this network that I'm using right now is metered. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the other thing is that you'll need to be on a decent data plan too, right? So you don't want people to be going over their data plan. So we've got these inbuilt stuff we can manage around that in Config Manager now as well.
Yeah. So assuming that has deployed properly, right? Then that's going to be for the pilot. So how do you deploy to the production machines? That one you don't really do automatic deployment rules, right? So you probably would use criteria for search over here or use the software update group that has already been created earlier, the automatic deployment rule, and create a separate deployment for the production machines. So let's demo the other way, the first method. Just want this. Okay. So I want Windows Server for the 12R2 and critical ones superseded, no. And I can add another product as well. Add it here. Windows 8.1 and then search. So it pays to save this search. If you're going to do this every month, you want to save that current search, so you don't have to go through it all over. So all these updates that have now come up in my one, I can select all of them, right-click, create a software update group. Okay. You must put relevant information in the description, by the way. Okay? So now it should return that one that I created. I can right-click, download, and then create a new deployment package or use the existing one. Okay? Here's a question. When a client receives, well, a client would run a scan cycle, right? When it runs a scan cycle, what does it do? What is it trying to achieve? Looking at what it needs. So a client knows what it needs now, right? And you initiate this deployment to it. Time for the client to download the updates, right? In this set of updates, we have Windows Server 2012 R2 and Windows 8.1. Will the client download the entire package? No? Anybody says yes? Everybody? Unsure? Okay. The answer is no, it will not. So that's what we call selective download. A client will selectively download what updates he needs based on the last scan cycle. When is the last scan cycle? When was the last scan cycle? When? When you start the evaluation. That's also right. The scan cycle, by the way, runs at different times. One of them is the deployment cycle. The other one is the scheduled scan cycle. And the other one is when you're about to install it, right? Prior to installing the updates, right, it does initiate another scan cycle prior to downloading it. Okay. So are you going to use that one? And that's it. And it fails. So we're not really concerned about how these work because all of you have this working in your environment. So we wanted to talk through those different options and the behaviors of what's happening behind the scenes.
Sorry. Can I say something?
I was going to ask you, how do you maintain software updates? Like, do you keep the superseded ones? The expired ones? So how do you maintain them? Do you have a script? Because my suggestion is for you to actually look out for scripts or write your own script out there that would do the cleanup. Mm-hmm. Okay? I've seen a few scripts being used by customers that do cleanups of this retired and superseded software. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it makes your console all messy because, like, you get these gray X's all over the place, right? So keep it tidy. Tidy's good.
All right. Cool. So I'm going to turn over to Annette now.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, question.
That was really good. Yep.
It doesn't. Yeah. You actually still have them there. Right, you would see that as well in a lot, in some of our forums that it still doesn't delete. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. That's why we wrote scripts to delete them. Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. So why would you go to System Center? Because WSUS already has those features for auto approve and stuff like that. So I guess what we're really after here is having three things. Automatic deployment rules, right? The flexibility in terms of deploying, which is quite similar to WSUS, which is there already. Then the other thing would be reports. You get better reports and you can write your own reports for it. The last one I would say would be updating your images, right? Because you have WIM files, right? So WIM files, you don't want your WIM file, well, when you're deploying, you have the task sequence at the very end to install updates. Over time, your deployment will become longer because of the updates. So if you manually update using offline servicing, right, you don't have to re-image. Mm. You have a newly freshened image with new updates. So, yeah, it does. That's true. That's something we're constantly working on.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Yeah. I use a couple of methods. I use an offline software updates tool. And I do that in the actual machine before I take the WIM image, so before I capture it. And then I use this method to actually keep on injecting the monthly ones. But you are right, some of them just won't go in there. It's one that I've found out there. Yeah. Oops, sorry. But look, there's different methods and there's no definite right way. But I think the other thing it doesn't do is it doesn't put your Office updates into your WIM file. So it's only the Windows updates.
Right. So what antivirus are you using?
Yeah, are you using endpoint protection like OutOne or are you using Symantec?
Okay. Oh, that's why. No, no, no.
Yeah, okay. No, that's
true.
Yeah. No, good point. Yeah, it is a good point. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question, because that would be a huge file, but that depends on what network you have, all right? So that's why we have options for creating a pre-staged content, right? So if it's too big for your network, create an offline package and import that into your DP's offsite where the network is not good.
Close your awesome little report there.
All right, so... Thanks. So we're moving on to...
So I'm going to show some of the tools from the R2 Toolkit. Now, how many people here are using R2 Toolkit? One. Wow, okay.
All right.
So let me just show you some cool stuff in here. Let's see. Come
on. You missed the R?
Oh. What did I miss? Oh, the R. I missed half the word. Okay, just one moment. Okay, yeah, that's all right. You are.
Yeah.
Okay, so this first tool here is the Content Library Explorer. So when I said right at the start, so how does anyone look at the Content Library? It's encrypted, right? Well, it's encrypted. It's not the same as what we used to have. So this tool will let you look inside the content library. So we have our packages here, and you'll be able to, or applications, I should say, application packages, same stuff. Whatever's in the content library, you'll be able to start to see and be able to read without sort of having to undo anything in the content library. You just come in here and use this little tool. So this one's a really, really useful tool. Especially when you're trying to work out, well, why is it getting so big? I need to sort of see what's in there without too much a hassle, right? So that one is the first tool I recommend. This one here, so this is the distribution point job queue manager. So we only have one DP, so it's not very exciting, but... what this one does is it tells us, if you have multiple DPs out there, most people have got multiple DPs? Yeah. Okay, so what this will do is it will show you what jobs are actually running right now, and you can actually cancel a job from here. And it's just a nice, easy tool to come into and to do that, right? For some reason that didn't connect.
Yeah, especially if you updated the distribution point with a new WIM file.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, cool. No, it doesn't want to connect. Or maybe it has. Oh, let's have a click over here. Yep, so what you would start to see is the DPs listed down in this here, the running jobs over there, the total jobs, and the total retries if something's having trouble getting out there. So you can quickly see, oh, look, this is actually stuffed up on this one over here, and you can start troubleshooting whatever you need to do. We've got info, so let's have a look and see if there's anything, nothing happening on my DP. It's a pretty boring one. You can come in here, manage the job. So this is where you'd come into it. You go in and you right-click and you can cancel, like I said. You can't pause. So I was looking for the pause button. There is none. Don't even bother looking for it. But there is a cancel button. So that's the second little tool I'll show you. And then this one here. So who's used the RBA viewer? Does anyone even know it exists? Now, in your organisation, are you guys actually using role-based administration? Are you giving the roles? Are you... Yep, you're segregating off the console. This tool, what it does is it lets you meld the roles. Like, we can do that in the console a little bit, but what this does is it gives us a nice visual of what the end result will look like. So we can go, oh, yeah, I want read-only, and oh, no, I don't want that one. I want, like, application administrator, and I want, like, maybe operating system deployment manager. And then what you can do is you come down here, you analyse it, and it gives you what the console will end up looking like. So this is really quite nice. We also have role-based administration on our reports now. I'm not sure if you're that familiar with that yet, but we can. So I'm not going to do it today because it takes too long to set it up. But basically, you can create custom reports with role-based administration. There's role-based administration already on the reports that are out of the box. So you can restrict who sees what reports. The first question that always comes to my mind is, why would you want to restrict reports? But, you know, yeah. It's there. I suppose some people do. Yeah. I suppose if you're in a real secure environment, something like this, right? Yeah, so there's always reasons why we have this stuff. Just because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it's useful. Okay, so this one here, the Power Viewer. So who's using Configuration Manager to manage their power settings on their devices? Couple? Yep, cool. When this is actually working in a production environment, what you can actually do is you can connect to another machine, and what it will give you in this view, it hasn't come through on our lab, but that's okay. But see the different colours there? What you'll start to see is a graph. And I used to work in computer forensics, and one of the things that they used to always ask me, so the human resource teams, was how long did that person stay connected into their computer? When did they log in and all this stuff? This tool would be awesome for that, because what you can do is it will tell you the username, it will say when they logged in, it will give you a history, and then you can give that report to your human resources and they can take remediation, you know, against that person or whatever it is. But this is a really nice little tool as well. There's a few more in the toolkit, but I haven't got time. But look, go and get it. It's free. Just download it, install it on your primary server, even on your machine, your own machine, and give it a go. Oh, gosh, I haven't got much time for my report.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Get into it. All right. Okay, so I'm just going to jump into our report pretty quickly and try and get as far through it as I can. So we go into our monitoring, and we'll go in here. We go create report. And I'm going to do a SQL-based report, and I'm going to call it CM Custom. I don't know why I put report there, but it is a report. And then I'm going to go to the path, so I'm going to put it into a folder that I actually created. How do we create a folder for our reports? Nope. You can't create a report folder in the console. But what we can do is we can create a folder using the Internet Explorer view. So you go into web reports and then you can go new folder. So that's how I created my TechEd demo folder. I don't know why they didn't just put that in the console, but they didn't, so this is how you do it. All right, so now we've got Report Builder open. Who's even tried to use Report Builder? A few people?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
No.
Yeah, I know.
Wrong question.
Yeah, that was a rhetorical question. All right, first what we do is we select our data resources, and then we go and we create what we call a new data set. So the way we do this is we give it a name. Down here, choose our data source, which we've just specified before, go into our query designer, open this as our local, just your current user if you like, and what I've actually done is I've sort of gone in already and I've worked out what tables I'm going to use. Actually, that's wrong, not looking at tables, I'm looking at, what am I looking
views.
At? Views. Yes. So why do we use views, Albert? Tell me that.
Well, I think views are consistent across different versions of Config Manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can basically use them. But does that mean that I can use the same report that you're building right now for my 2007 environment?
No.
Why not?
Hmm.
Has anybody know? Can I use this report that I'm building for 2007? Hmm. Because 2007, unless you're using SQL reporting services, then you can. Otherwise, it'll be using something else.
Okay, so this, what we do, so in 2007 we sort of had, you know, when you went and created a custom report, you sort of had the picker thing, and we sort of just sort of melded it together. So this report builder is sort of similar to that. One of the key things, I think, with anything, though, is we need to know what are we wanting to be in our report. So I'm just going to choose a few things here. I'm just going to go for the NetBIOS name. And the, what was the other one? What was the outcome? Username. So this is actually a key one that people want to see, right? They want to know what user is actually using a machine. And it sort of makes sense. Like, why don't they just put a report in there that does this? Because nearly everyone that I go and see wants that report. So this is how you would do it. Now I'm going to add another table. I'm going to add in here. I'm going to add the workstation. Well, I might just actually add just operating system, eh? Yeah. So VGS operating system. Go. I'm going to add caption. So, funny thing here, caption, what does that mean? It is actually just, it is, caption means the operating system name, right? So, but that's what that is. So, who here is actually quite into their SQL stuff? Not many people. SQL, for admins who use Config Manager quite a lot, you'll probably, a good idea is just to get familiar with the views at least. And in that way, we're able to understand at least doing this kind of stuff. So don't give this job over to a SQL admin or a DBA. I would just suggest give it a go because it's actually not that difficult. You could actually just use, for instance, you could use the SQL that thing called, like the query designer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could use query designer to do the same thing and then just copy and paste it into this query part. But I just find it a little bit more fun if we click a few more boxes and stuff like that, right? So let me just, why can't I see the bottom?
Move it up.
I don't move it up. Go like this. Now move it up. Now I click OK. Specify a valid name. Okay, I'll
begin with CM.
Name content, blah, blah, blah.
Space. Remove the space.
Oh, you reckon it's that?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Okay, thanks, guys. Awesome. Okay, now what we do is we just go in here and we create a table. So this is the query that we just made, and we're going to go, I bet that one says next. And then we're just going to put in, like down here, NetBIOS name, and then we're going to go and grab each of these. Actually, I'm going to just, yeah, I'm going to grab each of these. So I'm going to bring that over there like that. And then I'm going to click next. And there we go. So that's the start of it. So I'm going to make it a stepped one. This is just showing some different options that we have available. And then I'm going to make it a little bit, bring it across here a little bit more. I haven't got time to sort of customize it too much, so I'm just going to click run. And so now we can go and get more information on each of the machines, who's used what.
Don't mind the username, by the way. That's Laura.
I didn't make it up. It's Laura Fush.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that's how we do it. And then what we do is we click save. And of course, we go back to our Config Manager console. And now we should be able to go down to our awesome TechEd demo category, which is down here. And we've got our one of these, which one?
That
one? Yeah. And we can run that. And voila. So it's not too difficult. If you need to, it's there. Oh, that's another one, but that's all right. If you need to, it's there to create your own custom reports. Have a go, and I think you'll find it easier than what you're thinking. People, of course, say, oh, it takes too much time and stuff like this, right? But honestly, just get into it. All right, so that's all our demos. How do we push the button, please?
Thank you.
Yeah, good one. That was hard, eh?
All right.
What you learned, we hope. Using applications rather than packages. Oh, we didn't even mention that, but that's a key thing. Don't enable too many software metering rules. We didn't even mention that one. How many did we have? So we meant to probably keep it not too many, right? Because we don't need to have every single application being metered. I had one customer say to me, oh, I'm just going to meter everything. I need to know everything. I'm like, man, you're going to have a massive database, so I suggest you don't do that. Oh, I'm just going to do it. Okay, whatever. Do what you want, but I told you, if it gets too big, don't blame me. Use the toolkit. It helps with stuff. So get into that as well. Keep your patching process simple. Simple is good. Keep it simple, stupid, right?
Yeah.
Leverage reports and subscriptions. Don't be scared to customize reports. So that's our key things.
All right.
So there we go.
Do you agree now?
Yeah, have we convinced you?
Still no.
Not really.
On your way out. If you want a Windows
if you want a cap, if you
just
want
grab
a hat,
one over here.
Just come up here. You can get a free hat because we're good like that.
You only have like 25.
We've got 25, so some people might miss out, but it's all right. Come and grab one. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Andrew, how are you?